Earlier this year, my brother, who teaches at Emory University, ran a bioethics conference for scholars from all over the world in Atlanta. And I flew to Atlanta to support his conference and to go and listen to the speakers. And it was being held at one of the large hotels in downtown Atlanta, and as it happened, another conference was taking place at the same time, and so the hotel was very crowded. And like a lot of large hotels, they have a big bank of elevators on the ground floor, some of which only go to certain floors. So you have to make sure you take the right elevator to get to your floor. And because the two conferences converged at the same time, it took an awfully long time. My brother was on the top floor. That was the brain center of the conference. And I went up there, and we were visiting for a while, and it was time to go. And we go out to the elevators, and there are six doors. And we push the button, and we wait a long time. And I said, you know, this hotel doesn't have enough elevators. He said, that's true, they really don't. I said, not only that, but not all of these come up to this floor. And he said, I think all of these do. We laughed uncontrollably. And then I told his wife, my sister-in-law, the story, and she told me the story of when her brother, who became a Navy SEAL, was going through the final part of his SEAL training. And his commanding officer was taking him around the Pentagon and showing him the various offices and so on and so forth. And in the middle of it, he stopped and said to her brother, now you understand the structure of the building, right? And he said, yes, it's an octagon. And he said, no, it's a Pentagon. It made me feel a little bit better. But it is not unlike the joke that I told first night Rosh Hashanah, and since some of you weren't here, and I like it a lot, I'm going to tell it again and make a different point with it. It's a versatile joke. Sherlock Holmes decides that he and Watson are going to go camping. And they go out, and it's the middle of the night, and Holmes looks up, and he's looking at the stars, and he wakes Watson up, and he says, Watson, what do you notice? What do you observe? And Watson looks up at the stars and he says, well, I see there's a trail on the left, which must mean there was a shooting star, and I can see the constellation of Orion, and I can see the moon, and it's a little bit less than a half moon, almost a gibbous moon, which means that it's probably going to increase. And Watson feels very proud of himself, and he says, there, Holmes, what did you observe? And Holmes says, I observed that while we were sleeping, someone stole the tent. Now the point of this, and it really is a point, is that we make stupid mistakes all the time. And the stupid mistakes we make are not only intellectual mistakes. We make mistakes and we do things wrong all the time because we're human. And therefore, we are flawed. And we're flawed all through us. There is not a piece inside of you that is perfect and pure and would never make a mistake. In fact, we are split. And we're always at war with ourselves, all of our inclinations. And the idea that all you have to do to be good, an idea that we hear too much, is follow your heart, or listen to your highest self, or chase your dreams, is nonsense. Judaism has a much more realistic picture of the way the world works. You notice that when you said the Shema just a little while ago, you said, Lo taturu acharei levavchem yacharei einechem asher atem zonim achareihem. Don't go after your eyes and your heart, that will lead you astray. Now, obviously, that's not always true. It's not always bad advice to follow your heart. But the idea that you can get through life without deep, difficult moral struggles, that you don't have to make war with yourself because if you just follow your heart, you will be fine, is a dangerous idea. And it's wrong. To feel something is right doesn't always make it right. And we all know this because we know how much there is that we don't know. Sometimes I think we beat our chests not only to get them started again, but because they don't always do what they should. Sometimes we feel things very deeply and then discover that it wasn't good for us. In our confessional, we confess to Yodim below Yodim, for sins we commit knowingly, because sometimes we know, and also below Yodim, sins that we commit without knowing it, because our knowledge is limited. Our feelings are sometimes distorted. Because everyone knows, if you're a parent, that sometimes in love you've done things for your children and it ended up hurting them. And every child knows sometimes you've done things in love towards your parents and ended up hurting them. That's what it means to be a person. It's to recognize that there is no simple, straight path to perfect morality, that we make stupid mistakes emotionally, intellectually, humanly. We don't ever say an al chet for not following our hearts. You won't find that. Trust me, in the prayer book I've looked. You don't beat your chest, dear God, I've sinned because I have not listened to my dream. Sometimes it's important. I'm not negating that. But it is not a foolproof method. And Judaism has nothing against having some sleepless nights or wrestling with a sense of sin, or sometimes being ashamed, or sometimes feeling guilty. Those are not bad things. I ask the bar mitzvah kids when I interview them, if you could change something about yourself, what would you change? And I cannot tell you how often they say to me, nothing. All the time. But I want you to know that they say it because they think that's the answer I'm looking for. They think that's the right answer, because that's what the world has told them. You're a perfect, special child. Everything about you is wonderful. So I say to them, really, is there nothing that you want to work on? No place you want to grow? Nothing you do that you wish you did less? Nothing that you don't do that you wish you did more? Is there nothing? What I don't say to them, because they're way too young, is, look, I'm a big Edith Piaf fan, but Jim and Regret React is very immoral. I don't regret anything. It's a good song, but it's not true. Who goes through life and says, I don't regret anything? Not the people I hurt, not the wounds I caused, not the scars, not the pain. I don't regret anything. Yeah, other people suffer, it's okay. Of course you're supposed to regret. Abraham Joshua Heschel once had someone come up to him and said, you know what? I don't need God. I don't need synagogue. I'm a pretty good person. To which Heschel, who had a moral and ethical sensitivity that the rest of us can really only imagine, said, I envy you. Me, I'm always saying the wrong thing. I'm always not saying something that could help. I'm always making mistakes. I need God. I need synagogue. I'm not nearly as good as I should be. We take sin seriously. That's why we beat our chests. That's why we repent. That's the Jewish theory. It's not so simple to be good. It's complicated and it's hard, and we get it wrong all the time. But just like you need a sense of sin, you can't get stuck there. You can't luxuriate in it. Remember that the Jewish tradition teaches that we are not sinners, even though we sin. It's not our identity, it's our action. We're not stuck in sin. And the reason we're not stuck in sin is very simple. Because as much as we believe in sin, we believe in forgiveness. That's what this day is really about. You know, Yom Kippur is not a sad day on the Jewish calendar. It's not a day of mourning. It's not Tisha B'Av, where you tear your clothes and you weep because of the destruction of the temple and the killing of people and the tragedies of our history. No, it's a day of forgiveness. Forgiving is hard. It isn't easy to forgive someone else. I think it's not only difficult because we feel hurt, but it's difficult because when you forgive someone else, when you really forgive them, really, inside yourself, not just words you speak, but some reaction that changes your soul, when you do that, you have to give up your superiority. As long as someone hurts you, you're better than they are. You are the one who hurt me. But if you really forgive them, you have leveled the ground. You can't hold it against them anymore. And I think, strange as it may sound, if we do enough emotional excavation, that's also why it's so hard to forgive ourselves. There's a piece of us that wants to look down on the other piece of us. We are split inside. I mean, think about it for a second. What does it mean, I don't forgive me? Which part of me doesn't forgive the other part of me? But as soon as you realize that you're all one, both you and the other person, and you and yourself, that we all sin, we all hurt, and we all cause hurt, then you realize how desperately we all need to forgive and be forgiven. Not only by others, but also deeply by ourselves. Yes, if you really are honest, you've done some bad things. And some bad things that you haven't really owned up to. That you've only a little bit owned up to, like the guy who sent this letter to the IRS, true or not, I don't know. I can't sleep because I cheated, so I'm enclosing a $100 check he wrote. If I still can't sleep, I'll send you the rest. It's like, yeah, I know I hurt the person, but if you really feel what you do, then you can really feel the power of forgiveness. We are all of us of the broken lives and picked up pieces of the faltering promises and mislaid resolutions. We're all of us groping in the dark with one another and with ourselves. That's the truth of the human condition. Anybody who tells you that human beings are all good and all sweet is not enlightened. They're just mistaken. But we are given this astonishing power to forgive. And in our tradition, the knowledge that if God can forgive you, surely you can forgive yourself. If God, who knows razim, as the Talmud has it, all the secrets, if God still expresses love, then on Yom Kippur, again and again, we say, Ahava Rabbah, have come with great love, you have loved us, you can forgive yourself. Yes, there are requirements. Yes, you have to try to make amends. Yes, you have to apologize. Yes, you have to do better. All that is true. Forgiveness is not an escape hatch. It's a struggle and a gift. But if you have ever had a moment in your life, and I pray that you have, when you have done something wrong, something bad, and really been forgiven, then you know that is a transcendent moment. It's a moment when the divine and the human meet. It is beautiful and memorable. And you can have that moment between people, and sometimes, believe it or not, you can have that moment inside yourself when something that you carry for years, you say, I'm going to forgive myself. Not because it wasn't wrong, but because I recognize that I'm human. Now, I have no illusions that this is easy, or that this is something you have never heard. I remember many years ago my father telling me the story of Coolidge, President Coolidge, who was famously laconic. He would only use a few words. It was very hard to get him to say much. And the story goes that once he came home from the church and his wife said to him, so what did the preacher talk about? And he said, sin. And she said, so what did he say? He was against it. And I thought, it is possible that when you leave here, someone will say, what did the rabbi talk about? And you'll say, forgiveness. And they'll say, what did he say? And you'll say, he was for it. But it isn't that I'm for it. It's that I believe that without it, we are doomed. And that with it, we are saved. And I don't mean saved in the next world. I mean saved in this one. It is the keystone, not only of this day, but of what it means to move through the world in a way that allows you blessing. Forgiveness is what unties the knot that binds you to your pain. Your ability to be forgiven and to forgive. A lot of what we know about the great artists of the Italian Renaissance comes to us from Vasari, who wrote about Michelangelo and Da Vinci and Rembrandt. And in an almost throwaway line, he says something beautiful and powerful about Rembrandt. He says, when Rembrandt painted, he would put a candle in his cap so that there would be no shadow on the canvas. That's what forgiveness is. Forgiveness is the light that you carry with you that dispels the shadows. Judaism believes that we sin, that we wound, that we thrust our hands unthinkingly among the heartstrings of those who are near us, and we cause them pain. But it also believes that we carry that light, that we can change, that we can lift, that we can be forgiven, and that we can forgive. May this year be for you, for those you love, a year of health, of sweetness, of peace, and of forgiveness. Because you will discover what a beautiful light forgiveness will bring to your beautiful soul. Shana Tova.